Magic pills. Are there really magic pills that can cure cancers, that can cure viruses, diseases, prolong our life, give us better quality of life, or is it just all hype? Today we talk to homeopath and filmmaker Ananda Moore to talk about her film Magic Pills and talking about homeopathic medicine, which is one of the most widely used forms of alternative medicines on the planet. Is it snake oil, or does this stuff really work? We're going to talk to a former skeptic turned homeopath and see how it changed her life and her belief in these alternative medicines. I'm Tony Sweet with Captain Ron. You're listening to Truth Be Told. Please welcome to Truth Be Told Studios, Ananda Moore.
All right, it's Ananda Moore. How you doing?
Good, Tony. How are you?
I'm very, very happy, and I'm excited to have you here. It's been a couple of weeks since we've actually done a show just because of the craziness going on. But we are back in June. We're starting a lot of great new shows, and we're happy that Ananda's here to start us off. So, you know, I have to say, I want to play your trailer for your film here in just a second. But you started off as a kind of a skeptic of as I did with alternative medicines, and sometimes I still am. Because I think there's a lot of people out there that use these alternative medicines as a way to make money, the old snake oil. And I'm curious to see where that transition happened for you, and how you became not only a non-skeptic, but now a filmmaker and doing homeopathic medicines yourself. So I'm going to go ahead and play your trailer, and we'll talk about it after this. So don't go anywhere, everybody. We'll be right back.
Extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence. And if there ever is an extraordinary claim, it's homeopathy.
Homeopathic medicine is highly controversial, eliciting extreme emotions, from pure hatred to deep conviction in its capacity to heal.
My name's Ananda Moore, and I was concerned about how poorly I was fact-checked and how things that I had said were published incorrectly.
No, it's a piece of long-form literary journalism, which is how the genre operates.
She was not a concerned mother, but a reporter. I just felt so betrayed. I felt so manipulated.
Yeah, I want to talk about the evidence of the science.
Yeah, there's a lot of good stuff to talk about.
With so much at stake, I'm going to investigate the evidence, science, and use of homeopathy in the real world.
We get 200, 250 cancer cases. How many clinics in the world get that many?
Is this my grandmother? She was discharged from the hospital in that condition. She might not live in just 2-3 hours more. So after that, Banerjee's medicine started. She started recovering, and miraculously, I saw one day she's sitting there watching the television itself.
The interventions in Cuba were not contrived experiments. These were interventions in the real world where people were becoming unwell and dying.
She's in the ward. In TPC Hospital. I don't know for how long she's been there. We'll go there and find out. But she's so thin that she can't sustain vomiting and diarrhea. She just can't. It's impossible.
So they kind of become self-delusional. The arguments that they use are scientifically bankrupt.
The fact of the matter is that several researchers have done very sophisticated assays to demonstrate that that specific metal is in that specific remedy that started from that source material.
We're not trying to fight conventional medicine. We're trying to show that homeopathy is a very useful adjunct.
The current environment is viciously anti-homeopathy. But is the public narrative based on accurate science and reporting, or special interests and hearsay?
And unfortunately, there's a lot of this out there. Nonsense seems to be gaining on science.
That is what I mean when I say my treatment won't kill you. Their treatment might.
All right. Welcome back. I'm Tony Sweet, and I have Ananda Moore here. And she was the filmmaker of this film, Magic Pills. And you can go to magicpillsmovie.com to check it out, the trailer, and I'm sure the movie itself. But Ananda, so tell me, you were a skeptic for how long and when, what was it that made you start seeing a different light on alternative medicines?
Sure. Well, I first learned about homeopathy when I was in university. So I did a course called Witchcraft and the Occult, which tells you a little bit about how academia was perceiving homeopathy. And the way they taught it, it felt like one of the most ridiculous things I had ever learned. And I couldn't understand how people could be that gullible to believe that nothing could help treat whatever ailed them. And I think it's that process of how a homeopathic remedy is made that when you first hear about it, it sounds absolutely ridiculous. It's this process of serial dilution and what we call succussion, which is shaking, that looks really bad, shaking a remedy against a hard surface. And that's done about 100 times between each dilution. So what's happening is they're taking one drop of a solution, putting it in 99 drops of water, shaking it up, and then doing that over and over again until, according to basic laws of chemistry, Avogadro's number, there is nothing left in that vial. And then you're giving that to someone as medicine. So it sounded quite ridiculous to me. And I really couldn't wrap my head around how anyone could possibly believe that that could have any kind of effect. Later on, I was backpacking through India and I ended up traveling with this lovely German girl. And homeopathy originated in Germany. And this woman's mother is a homeopath. So she'd outfitted her with this lovely kit. And I one day woke up very, very ill. And she comes to me with her kit, picks out some sugar pellets. And I thought I'd humor her and take the remedies. And what happened very quickly was that I felt better within 15, 20 minutes. And it just kind of shifted me a little bit. And I was willing to start considering that maybe there was possibly something there. And through my travels, homeopathy was very, very popular in India. So I met many people who were homeopaths. I met someone who was working for a homeopath. And this notion started to grow. And I went to see a homeopath who, after taking my case, gave me some sugar pills, and it significantly made a difference in my mental health at that point, where I'd been dealing with depression for most of my life. And I can say to this day, I can feel sad or upset, but I don't feel that chronic depression that I used to. And that's when I decided that maybe this is what I wanted to do for a living and that I wanted to help others with that same, what appeared to be at that time, magic.
And I mean, that's a big, I mean, really, if you think about it, that's kind of a switch, just for a few examples, because I remember watching the Beverly Hills Hillbillies, and I have a point, just so you know. but I remember Granny. For people that watch the Beverly Hillbillies, Granny was the matriarch of the family, and she says she can cure the common cold because she found a remedy. And the Mr. Drysdale, the bank owner, he thought, oh my gosh, they're multimillionaire now, but we're gonna take over the world with this new cure. Well, after, by the end of the show, Granny says, yeah, you take this, and after about 7 to 10 days, you're going to feel better. So it pretty much is kind of what you're saying is like, there's a lot of people out there that it's a placebo effect. It's like, oh, I took it, and I just happened to feel better pretty much immediately afterward, 15 minutes or a couple days afterwards. And I thought, well, maybe there's something to this. So how do we know? Because with science and with modern day medicine, that's going through the laboratories, it's going through, trials and tests. And how do we know a lot of these alternative medicines actually work without it being just a placebo that we think, oh, if within 6 to 10 days we're feeling better when it was just nature itself or your body's, because everybody's DNA is different too.
Mm-hmm. That's that whole, the cold, we'll treat it and it'll be
right.
2 weeks instead of 14 days, right, and you'll feel better. Yeah. So There's so many angles I would love to pick up on, but one of the things that I can discuss regarding homeopathy is that right. we actually have a growing and relatively robust scientific evidence base.
Okay.
And we do have hundreds of RCTs, randomized placebo-controlled trials. I just messed that up. randomized controlled trials. Double blind, we have triple blind, we have crossover studies. And in fact, we have several meta-analyses. And what a meta-analysis is a massive review of all the literature out there, which is then mathematically analyzed to see what the material out there in general says. And there are, I believe there's 5 meta-analyses, 4 of which are positive. And all of them seem to say that the higher quality, that homeopathy has higher quality studies than conventional medicine often. And there's a really great study, an analysis like this by a doctor named Robert Matthey. And there he found that the higher quality the study, the lower the risk of bias, the more likely that study is to be positive for homeopathy. So we have a pretty good evidence base. We need to grow it. There is no question. There are a lot of scientists out there trying to do that. We have not even just clinical trials, but basic science trials where we're looking at how cells respond in a petri dish, at which point there should be no placebo effect. We have studies on plants that should, by all rational purposes, have no placebo effect, and we have the same studies on animals.
Right.
Another problem is how do you define placebo and what does placebo refer to? Some people think it's a quantum entanglement. There's very strange things that happen in placebo trials. The more a trial is repeated, the higher the placebo effect becomes. There's different aspects like this, which make talking about placebo very complex.
Right.
But if you just want to look at the basic literature base, there's a lot of science there that stands up to scrutiny.
One thing I noticed in the film that you did an article, or somebody did an article on you, and the reporter, started misquoting you and didn't represent you well. I'm sure, and somebody even in the chat room says, if homeopath gets a bad press, mainly from Big Pharma, which I'm sure they're not, Big Pharma is not happy with homeopath alternative medicine field, how can they promote virus vaccines? I mean, so when you got that bad rap and you called the editor, I mean, he pretty much just blew it off. And it's like, well, that's just the way they wrote it. I mean, and that's not what press or media or anybody's supposed to be doing. They're supposed to, give the facts. So how has the media influenced you on your drive to get the word out? And how has it, I guess, put a bad taste in your mouth?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen over the years the media become more and more aggressively negative towards homeopathy. And it's gotten to the point where the mainstream media will not give it any positive light at all. So to me, that's a very biased perspective. Right. They need to be open to more debate. And the only debates they seem to be open to are pre-recorded where they can edit people to say what they haven't said. So, there was my case with this. It actually happened with 2 different very well-respected magazines here in Canada, one called The Walrus, which I basically said that none of the research I had given them had ever been published in peer-reviewed journals when I had given them the writer, the photocopies from the peer-reviewed journal. And when I had made that comment and I'd had that discussion with the editor, which you see in the film, he much later got back to me and just left a message on my answering machine saying, well, we looked into this and there's no way they could have been published in peer-reviewed journals because they're not randomized controlled trials. but they were very, very large epidemiological studies involving millions of people, which had it been a vaccine or another drug, there's no question it would have been considered real science.
Right.
And what bothered me about this was that this editor is making false claims about what kind of research goes into a peer-reviewed journal without having a clue, which means that the people who are telling the general public how to think about things, how to think about science, how to think about medicine, how to think about health, don't know the first things about it. And those are our guardians to information. They're shaping so much and yet know so little.
Right. Well, what's funny is, you know, as the years have gone on, and I don't care what news outlet or, you know, network you watch, it almost seems like every other commercial is a big pharma commercial. So that's, I mean, I can see where, you know, these big companies are pretty much supporting these media companies and networks. So yeah, they're not gonna say too kind words about the alternative medicine just because they don't want to take money out of their pockets. So well, and also when I was watching the film, I noticed that there was a focus on the AIDS epidemic. To this day, I mean, right now we're going through a pandemic of the coronavirus, and it's only been around just a few months. But there's been viruses such as the AIDS and HIV have been around for 40, some almost 50 years now. And there's been no cure. There's been some medicines to, you know, kind of treatment for it. But how has alternative medicine, homeopath, helped people with living with AIDS or HIV?
Well, I'm going to talk specifically about what you saw in the film, because I'm a regulated health professional in Ontario, and they have stopped us from being able to make any claims about what we do.
Okay.
But what we see in the film is two homeopaths, Jeremy Scher and Camilla Scher, who moved to Tanzania and opened an organization called Homeopathy for Health in Africa. Mm-hmm. Jeremy had been seeing in his practice that he had successfully helped people with HIV and AIDS heal, feel better, deal better with the side effects of their medications and so on. And he thought, wow, I could make a really big impact in a place like Africa. And he is originally South African. So there was a calling to the continent. And he ended up in Tanzania, just where he found the people to work with and the collaboration in a good place. And, you know, you mentioned money before. These people have come here, opened this whole operation. Everything is free of charge to the people participating. They're providing so much care to people who otherwise would have zero access to medical care, actually. And they work hand in hand with the hospitals as well. So you're asking how they're helping. Well, I saw just like day after day of sitting in clinic with Jeremy, just remarkable cures. There's one in the video which we passed through very quickly, but it was a man who had come with Kaposi's sarcoma, which is a type of cancer that affects people with no immune system. And he comes in and all he has left is discoloration where these huge lesions had been before. Another really impactful actual story is that they work with AIDS widows. I don't know if you know much about them, but there is such a stigma in Africa around people with AIDS. And the widows are often blamed for their husbands dying. They're blamed for bringing AIDS to their husband. And when that happens, they have a young husband, he suddenly dies. They realize it was AIDS. The woman becomes ostracized from the community. The families will come, take everything away from them. And when they start becoming sick, because they got AIDS from their husband, they now have a hard time working. They're alone with their children. They have no family support, very little income. And when they lose their energy and can't work in those fields, it's all over, not just for them, but for their children. So these are women that are coming to HHA, Homeopathy for Health in Africa, and receiving care. And they come back and their energy is good. Their sleep is good. Their physical symptoms are gone. Their hair is growing back. And now they're able to take care of their families. And what we show in the film is that their CD4 counts go up, which means that there's the medical tests, the serological evidence to say something is changing and improving. And they're working alongside with the medical doctors, with the antiretroviral drugs. Right. But the drugs don't change. They only have one line there. So what they're allowing to happen is an extension of how long a person can stay on the one line of medication. Maximum, if you're wealthy and have good connections, two lines of medications that are available. In the Western world, people go through different cocktails and move from one cocktail to another as the cocktail they were on becomes ineffective. They don't have those options in places like that. And that is where homeopathy is making a massive difference.
Yeah, I was looking to see how long alternative medicines have been used, you know, throughout society. And it was like 60,000 years. But homeopath, the term, has only been around, what,
200
years. Do you know much about why that term started?
Yeah. So the current founder of homeopathy, the person who named it, was a doctor named Samuel Hahnemann. He was in Germany, and he was very disillusioned with the medical tools he had available as a physician in those days. And I think we can remember things like venesection and mercury and leeches, right, and bleeding people. And that style of medicine was actually hurting more people than it helped. And he became very frustrated with that and gave up the practice of homeopathy. I mean, of allopathy, as it was called. And we often still refer to it that way. And he was a great, you know, it was before the advent of the scientific method as we understand it today. But I would say he was a man of science.
Right.
He was an incredible linguist. He spoke many, many languages. And he became known as an expert for his translation work of medical texts. So at one point, he was translating a text on chincona bark, which is the bark of a Peruvian tree from which we get quinine, which we're hearing a lot about in the news right now because that's hydrochloroquine. It's the natural from which we've formulated hydrochloroquine. And it was an antimalarial. And this man who had written this original text had postulated that quinine worked against malaria because it was astringent. And Hahnemann questioned that. Well, that's not possible. There's lots of other things that are astringent and aren't antimalarial. Right. So he decided to start taking it himself to see what would happen.
Oh, wow.
And over a period of time of taking it, he started to develop
fever,
malaria symptoms. And that, I don't think that was the sole energy of, or reason that he came to the conclusion that like cures like, which is what homeopathy means.
Right.
Homeo, similar, and pathy is pathology or suffering. So similar suffering. Where allopathy, what we tend to call conventional medicine, means different suffering. So we try to treat with a similar and generally conventional medicine, not all the time, treats with the opposite. They try to suppress antibiotics, antihistamines, right, anti-inflammatories. So it's a different process. But this wasn't new. Hippocrates talked about it. Paracelsus talked about this notion of like cures like. We find it in a lot of indigenous and traditional medicine. So it was more the formulating of this methodology that was down to Hahnemann 200 years ago.
How does one like yourself, when you start studying, is there a certain society that has brought more to homeopathic medicines, you know, from the Native Americans or the Egyptians, or was there any society that brought more to the table than others?
What we see is our what we call polycrests, which are the most used, most popular original medicines as they first came along, were actually, I believe, from the European pharmacopoeia, or what the Europeans 200 years ago were using as their medicine. So we see things like belladonna, which is deadly nightshade, things like mercury, lycopodium. These would all sit, if you ever go into a pharmacy museum, I've been into a few now, you can see the names of all these drugs. And I was like, oh, these are homeopathic pharmacies. They weren't. They just used the same medicines. So Hahnemann started with what they already knew and understood, because like cures like, right. You need to understand the action of that substance in order to understand what it will treat. So we start with the poisons that we understand. What are their effects? But over the years, we now have plants from all over the world. And as homeopathy has become a global phenomenon, homeopaths bring more and more of the local medicine to the picture.
You know, what's funny is, I know I'm kind of jumping all over, that's my ADD, but
no worries.
But you're following well. Thank you very much for that, amusing me. What I notice about, you know, when we think about homeopathic versus Vic Pharma is very money hungry, power. You know, and people in the chat room is like saying vaccines kill, which, you know, I haven't had a flu shot in 25 years. I don't want to take a flu shot. I know what's in this, and I want to get into the autistic side of it too, because my niece is autistic. But I also noticed that there's a lot of alternative medicine doctors, homeopathic doctors, at least here in LA, that, my God, a bottle of pills is $100. I mean, to me, that's not any different than Big Pharma charging, you know, $100 to $600 for a bottle of pills. And they say, you know, this is a month worth, but you need this, 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 and this. And each one of them is, you know, $60 to $150 a bottle. That's where I become a little skeptical when it comes to the alternative medicine field, because my thing is, if like you really care about the person, why are the pills so expensive to where you can really, if you have a good job or have money in the bank, you can afford it? So can you talk to that, please?
Yeah, I would love to see where you're seeing $100 bottles of remedies. I know there's maybe some private people who are really
there was a private
artificially
person.
Inflating the prices. Yeah. And I have had to pay once $300 for a remedy because we had to take it up to a very, very high potency, which takes weeks and a lot of wear and tear on the machines that do that. So there was that manufacturing process. But generally in the States, or like here in Canada, at my store, we sell most over-the-counter remedies for between $8 and $15.
See, that's perfect. That I can understand.
And I was in San Diego and went to a homeopathic pharmacy, and what I sold for $8, they were selling for $25 US.
Yes,
so right. Like my $8 is like six US. And I was astounded. I needed it. I needed to get it. It was an emergency. So I bought it. But there's great pharmacies in LA, like Santa Monica Pharmacy, that has right. great homeopathic practitioners working there. And they're going to sell you remedies at the recommended retail right. prices, which is around $8. So in fact, it's very affordable. And I think that's what threatens Big Pharma. You can't patent it.
Right.
It's super cheap to produce. It's super cheap to replicate if you know how to do it, and very simple. And one vial of medicine can last you a lifetime.
True. And so, I mean, it's not covered by insurance, but it's affordable where you don't have to have insurance to afford to purchase it.
Yeah. And it is, I think it's covered by some private insurances.
Oh, really?
It is in Canada. That. It's okay. Not covered by our public health care system. And yeah, there are occasional practitioners who, for some reason, because I think in line with the US private health care system,
right.
where doctors charge an arm and a leg, they think it's okay to charge $2,000 for an appointment.
Yeah.
But that's not the norm.
Because this was just the other day, about a month ago. And I was talking to this lady, and she's a doctor of homeopathic medicine. And she said, I think you'd, because, you know, I'm 50 years old now, so, you know, I'm trying to watch this. But I don't take any vitamins. I've never taken vitamins. When I go to the doctor, everything's fine. My blood pressure, my blood sugars, nothing. You know, I get worn down just like everybody else. But you know, this lady was like, oh, I think you need to take this and need to take this and need to take this and take. And I said, oh, okay, you know, I'm thinking, all right. Well, I'll have my office call you and get your credit card. Great. When it was like $400 and I'm like, what, $400 for four? And I said, could you, and one was 75 and one was, and I was just like, wow. I was thinking if, you know, who could afford it? Just an average person couldn't do that. I didn't get it because I'm like, I ain't going to pay no $400 for medication. But I think people like that should be called out. And I think people like that are taking advantage of the system. And because it makes them look just as bad as the big pharmas. I mean, I hope you somewhat.
Yeah, I think, and those are supplements, which is a very different type of practice. And I think there is an important place for that. But the thing, too, is that those high quality supplements are actually quite expensive to produce.
Right.
So, you know, maybe it's an herb from South America that has been raised organically by an, you know, right. there's the fair trade aspect, there's the research that goes into it, the production. So it really varies from, like, we call it life brand, like a no name brand that you get at the local pharmacy,
right,
of a vitamin C that's not maybe going to be as highly bioavailable. It doesn't have bioflavonoids. It doesn't have all the things that work synergistically with your body. But yeah, I mean, there's going to be people who take advantage. And there's also going to be the fact that sometimes things are just more expensive to produce depending on the product and the quality.
Right. And like you said, where it's coming from and how it's produced.
Yeah.
Okay. That makes sense. But it makes sense. But still, for the average person that's making minimum wage and has three kids and single mom or dad, they're not going to be able to afford that.
That, I think, is a failing of the healthcare system.
Right.
Those things should be supported and supplemented because they can reduce their preventative medicine.
Mm-hmm.
So if your vitamin D levels are at a good level, and vitamin D isn't expensive, but right, if you can test your vitamin D, make sure that you're supplementing it, you could prevent cancer later on. So there are things like that that are could be very vital and important and could actually reduce costs further down the line.
Right.
And I think it's a different story in Canada where all those supplements aren't covered, and but your drugs are. So you could have that $1,000 a month drug, no problem, I don't have to pay for it. I'd rather take that drug than the $10 vitamin D supplement that I have to pay for out of pocket. But I think it's a complex equation, and I think it talks more to the failing of our medical system based on treatment rather than prevention, and right, based on pharmaceutical patented drugs for which there's a massive profit attached to it.
I was going to say it's more profitable to treat it than to cure it.
Yeah, so. I think I saw a stat that the average cancer patient creates like $500,000 in profit for the medical industry.
Right, right. Yeah, I had a colonoscopy the other day, and it seriously, I looked at the bill they charged. The insurance was $10,000. I was like, God. I was like, you know, I didn't even get enjoyment out of it, and somebody made $10,000.
And when we go to travel to the States, or I can travel anywhere and get travel insurance. If I'm right, going to the States, my travel insurance goes up.
Oh, I'm sure.
Tenfold.
I'm sure.
Because the U.S. has created this system, and it was deliberate by the American Medical Association when it was formed. That was part of their raison d'etre.
Right.
They wanted to make medicine for the elite exclusive and very expensive.
And that's the way it feels. I hope you don't mind. I'm going to ask a few questions from our chat room.
Yeah.
And it's actually really, really good questions. Are there any antibiotics in natural medicine? His MD says no.
There's lots of natural antibiotics, not referring specifically to homeopathy, but things like tea tree oil. There's lots of studies showing how they kill bacteria. Things like colloidal silver, which you need to be a little careful with, but it's the original antibiotic. We have things like thyme oil, which are used in industrial cleaners because they're so potent, and yet they're much safer than some of the chemical drugs out there. So yeah, there's a lot in nature that has antibiotic properties. Neem oil, I don't know, I could go on, oregano. I don't know what I've mentioned already. But in homeopathy, our job isn't, we don't try to create the antimicrobial. Mm-hmm. Our goal is to work with your immune system so that the immune system is very powerful and very potent. And if it identifies a pathogen, it can neutralize it very quickly. And so our goal is to support the immune system in order for it to do the work. So we're not working against it with an antibiotic, anti-anything, because those antibiotics also kill the good bacteria in your body. Right. And then they cause dysbiosis. And then you have other problems that start to pile up. And there's absolutely a time and place for an antibiotic. But what's happened with our overuse, we now have all these antibiotic-resistant drugs. We have lots of people, or not antibiotic-resistant bugs. We have lots of people who are sick and have chronic illness directly due to the use of antibiotics. So our goal is to work with the body, enhance it, and encourage it to do the work.
Well, you know, and like I said earlier, we're still in a worldwide pandemic. And there's no cure for this. A lot of people have given their, you know, treatment options, but somebody else in the chat room said, are there any homeopathic natural medicines that can cure or even help coronavirus?
Right. So there, I'm not allowed to make any claims.
But
I can talk about what we've done historically. And, you know, we treat corona like we treat every other pathology. So on one side, it's a level of individualization. We look at the symptoms you're dealing with and we prescribe the appropriate medicine. And on the other, we can look at the historical data from 1918 and the influenza, the Spanish flu pandemic that this keeps getting compared to. We have so much data from that time because homeopathy was widely used then. And it's also before the era of antibiotics. And if you see the success of homeopathy there, it's even higher than the success rate of allopathic or conventional medicine in hospitals today with cases of pneumonia. So we're looking at pneumonia because all the flu deaths are actually, we call, happen from pneumonia. Mm-hmm. And often all pneumonia deaths are attributed to the flu, even though they didn't come from the flu. But that's kind of how the record keeping happens. But in 1918, we have hundreds of thousands of case studies that homeopathic and medical doctors maintained the data for. And homeopathy had on average a 0.7% mortality rate in the practice. And conventional medicine in regular hospitals, military hospitals specifically, had between 5 to 30% mortality rates.
This is a period in time that, you know, I always said this is like a bad movie. Or one of those movies you watch, you're like, that'll never happen. You know, at least in our lifetime, because of the advancement that we are. And, you know, we've seen many other viruses pop up, and even, you know, HIV, and millions of people have passed away from that. But nothing so bad to where it was airborne, at least in our lifetime, that we thought would go worldwide within a few weeks. I don't know this one, but Stormy, we love Stormy in our chat room, and we love everybody that's tuning in today. We appreciate you guys. She asked, what's the best treatment? I know, and I'm going to ask you after this, why you have to be very careful to make claims, because it's almost like a psychic. A psychic will go, well, you know, I have cancer. What should I do? And the psychic's like, you know, I can't give a medical advice, but... It's like, how do you go around the medical advice and actually give advice? But Stormy says, ask about the best treatment for, I don't know this one, Ehlers-Danlos, Danlos, D-A-N-L-O-S, Danlos?
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, I don't either. I say I take a lot of vitamins every day, especially vitamins to build collagen and bones, but still have problems with receding gum and wrinkles.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, there's lots of syndromes that I learn more every day. I'm not familiar with everything out there. But homeopathy is about the individualized treatment. So the best, there isn't an over-the-counter response for something like that. Right. You really do need to see and work with a practitioner, because they're going to take what we call the totality of symptoms. Things like what makes you feel better, what makes you feel worse, what are the mental, emotional, the trauma, the all that life experience that fits with that along with the physical. So it's very holistic from that perspective, but it's a little bit more difficult to practice in that you actually need to sit with someone and go through that process. And there's that art to it. If it was something like a cold, I could give you a few, you know, remedies and suggest which one is for which symptoms. Mm-hmm. And it could be much simpler for you to prescribe at home. And on that level, it's great. It's a great way to empower individuals with a small kit to be able to treat lots of minor ailments at home. Right. But when we're talking about severe chronic disease, you need to work with a practitioner. But I wanted to say, in regards to the previous question, sure, actually, about is there anything we can do for corona? In the film, we actually show how homeopathy was used in Cuba to prevent epidemics. And they've actually done it more than seven times, but seven of them are what's official and on record. And yeah, massive epidemics. We talked about this disease called leptospirosis, which we cover in the film. And to us, it's unknown, never heard of it, don't care. But there, it's a very deadly disease that kills up to 10% of people, where with corona, we're looking at 0.1 to 0.5, depending on whose research you're looking at and what you're looking at. So you can imagine how deadly and terrifying this disease is. And it's very prevalent in tropical countries after hurricanes. So they successfully stopped an epidemic there in 2 weeks. They had, for H1N1, they did a homeopathic intervention across the entire country, reaching 9 million people. And they ended up not having an H1N1 epidemic. We don't know if that was because of the prevention or not, but what did also really come to light was that there were 100,000 fewer doctor visits that year for upper respiratory tract infections. So there's a history. If you want to contact a practitioner, there's lots out there. There's even a helpline that's been set up for free help. And in the States, and you can go to homeopathyhelpnow.com and get acute care for free, or just for the cost of the remedies, I believe.
Well, one thing you mentioned earlier was oregano. What I'm thinking about, what are some of the top two or three, four herbs or anything that we can take to just keep our immune system up if we are trying to avoid, you know, not just the coronavirus, but, and then I want to get into the, before we get out of here, I can't believe it's already almost time to go, but autism. But okay. So what is some of the top that we can take? Right.
So from a like naturopathic perspective, things like, really it's the nutritional stuff. I think turmeric and curcumin are very powerful, very safe to take. Things like vitamin C are great for the immune system. Vitamin D3 that we've talked about, which our bodies produce when there's sun. Where I live half the year, we don't have enough sun. You're lucky in LA. You can have access all year long. Zinc, selenium. Those are a few of the top things that you can have in your cupboard. And we always take when we're starting to feel a little bit down. So, you know, very basic, very easy. A lot of these are very affordable. We're not talking about the $100 complex supplements. So, yeah, there's lots that can be done there. And if you are getting sick, things like oregano oil, garlic, those simple things that we talked about. And a homeopathic dose of aconite right when you're getting sick will help.
Well, many of us, you know, on our feed, and, you know, I've worked with many anti-vaxxers. I'm not necessarily against all vaccines, because I think, you know, sometimes we may have to. I remember when I, 4 years ago, I ended up getting almost septic, didn't even know it. Mm-hmm. I just got really sick, and they had to put me on antibiotics, and they said I was like that close to being septic, and because I could smell the infection, I could taste the infection. I just thought I had to like the flu or something. So I believe sometimes there's moments that you know we should use modern technology and modern medicine. But one thing that really has been since I was a kid. I was born in 1969. When I was a kid, we didn't see too many autistic kids. We didn't see too many autistic anything. So in the last 20 years, my gosh, it seems like everybody I know has one, two kids that are autistic. My niece is autistic. What do you feel has brought this on? Do you feel it's the vaccines that the kids are getting as babies? Because when I was a kid, we got them when we were in kindergarten. Now they're getting them when they're like 6 months old. Yeah. But anyway, what do you think what's going on with autism and how can homeopathic help?
So here's another place where it's hard for me to talk about, right? Because the regulatory body, the College of Homeopaths here in Ontario, has very explicitly said that we are not allowed to publicly have any opinion on vaccines. And so I could lose my license for saying they're good, they're bad, anything.
You won't tell them.
I'm happy to have a private discussion about it. But I can talk about, you know, I'd say 50 to 60% of my practice is working with autistic people and children. And we do a lot of what we call a homeopathic detox, where we help the body clear poisons and toxins. And somehow, beautifully, we see that kids start to get better. And if they're very young, I have several patients who apparently no longer have an autism diagnosis. It's much harder when they're older. I've seen patients have dramatic changes in their quality of life.
Right.
But I don't know if I've, you know, when someone who's in their 20s comes to me, I can never say we're going to cure anything. And yeah, it's even the name of this homeopathic technique. It has been made illegal. I can't even use the name of it anymore. So I'm not allowed to discuss it. I'm not allowed to talk about it. I can say I use homeopathy. I work with autistic people.
Right.
And like, I'm not even allowed to have testimonials on my site.
Really?
It's very, very controlled what we can do and say. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy to have that conversation in private. Unfortunately, I'm very confined.
Yeah,
in
well,
how I can speak.
We won't get too far into that then. Well, because we only have like 2 minutes left. Somebody was saying, I really love medical marijuana. That's something, you know, for years and years and years where I grew up. It was just the way we grew up. You know, my brother and sisters did it. But my dad, myself, and we're like, oh, that's just for lazy bums. You know, not mostly my dad. I just didn't understand it. And I was never a drinker. I never did drugs. I never smoked cigarettes. I was pretty healthy, you know, just naturally. But in the last probably 10 years, I've been noticing a lot of the people that through cancers, my dad has Parkinson's now, certain people that, you know, they get older and I've seen them suffer through cancers and, you know, Raynaud's disease and emphysema and all these stuff. But seeing how cannabis oil and cannabis itself is really helping a lot of people medically. And what's your thought of finally people are coming around, especially even in America, that, you know, a lot of states are making it legal, mm-hmm. recreational and medical, but slowly. Is Canada, isn't it legal there?
Yep, it's so legal for both uses. It was legal medically for quite a while, and then just recently became legal for recreational use.
Do you ever recommend that to people or?
Being a homeopath where we don't use raw herbs, I don't make it part of my practice. I have seen it help a lot of people.
Right.
There's a lot of really great research starting to come out on it. But I tend to view it maybe along the lines of conventional medicine in the way it treats the body.
Right.
Sometimes it's, you know, it's kind of a band-aid solution in many things. Like when we're talking about pain relief, right, or, I can't think of the word right now, in the eyes, the pressure,
glaucoma. I was going to say like glaucoma type style.
Yes. Thank you. and for those kinds of situations, it's very helpful, but it's not getting rid of the condition or right, dealing with the condition at its source. It's helping a person cope with the condition.
Right.
There are some examples where it may be curative, and more research is coming out on that. So I think it's great as a tool to manage, but I'm not sure it's always the answer for actual treatment.
Everybody, yeah. Well, I mean, Ananda, I hate to even say it's time to go, but it's time to go, and I'm going to have you back. And thank you for answering the questions that I had. Like I said, I come from just a everyday person. That's why I love doing what I do, because if I don't understand it, I'm going to ask it. I don't care if it sounded silly or not, because it's just but I know there's a lot of people that are out there that want these questions answered, because they're, especially right now, they're scared. They don't know what to do, believe in coronavirus or not. You know, I've known a couple people that have had it, and I've not known anybody that passed away yet, but there are a lot of people that are, you know, not surviving it. So, please, everybody, go to magicpillsmovie.com. You can check the movie out. I recommend it. It's a great film, and you can learn a lot. I learned a lot from what you've put together, and to see your transition and to see your evolution of being a skeptic, and now you're leading the way, and now you're a filmmaker. So congratulations.
Thanks so much, Tony. Thanks for having me on the show and letting me, you know, talk about these things, because I think they're not that widely available to the public. So it makes a huge difference being able to give the information to people, letting them explore the topic, and then decide for themselves what they want to do.
That's what I say truth be told is all about. Our truth is maybe not your truth, so get your butt off the couch and go check it out yourself. Learn. That's what we're all about. Well, thank you, Ananda Moore, and go to Magic Pills, that's with an S, pillsmovie.com, and check it out. Make sure you guys subscribe to our channel. We love getting more. We're trying to get the 31,000 subscribers. Come on, you can do it. And please leave a positive comment. And if you say anything bad, say it about Captain Ron, not about me, okay? Perfect. All right, so we'll see you guys next time on Truth Be Told. Until then, Ananda, thank you so much.
Thanks, Tony.
Bye-bye.